Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the Senior Director of Charts at Billboard. And joining me, as always, is Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital, Katie Atkinson. Hi, Katie.
Hey, Keith.
How's it going?
Not bad. Yourself?
I'm all right. Did you have a nice weekend?
Absolutely.
Anything exciting happen?
Well, we competed in a rib cook-off.
Really?
I feel like people have heard about my weekend cook-off.
Longtime fans
habits.
Of the podcast will know that Katie and her family does a rib cook-off every year.
Yeah.
How'd you do this year?
We won People's Choice.
You got a People's Choice
Award. We're the People's Champions. Yes, we were voted by the people as a People's Choice.
Well, that's cool. Was was there music to accompany the rib cook-off?
There always, yeah, there's a DJ outside.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's great.
Anyone that we know of?
Yeah.
David Guetta, perhaps?
Yeah, it's Diplo.
Diplo. No. Diplo was, you never know, pay him enough money, he'll show up.
Oh.
Well, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop and ribs on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got news about Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper's A Star Is Born soundtrack and its songs making a splash on our charts. How Lindsey Buckingham is suing Fleetwood Mac because nothing in the world of Fleetwood Mac is without drama. And the breakup of Ariana Grande and Pete Davidson. Along with chart updates on Steve Perry, Marshmello and Bastille, Little Baby and Gunna and Halsey and
all that.
All that and more.
Plus, we have an interview with Madison Beer. We talk all about her pop radio hit Home With You, her new collaboration with David Guetta, her album plans, and more, so stick around for all that. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Let's do some chart chat. Chart chat. First up, friend of the podcast, Lady Gaga.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
Previous guest, Lady Gaga.
Previous podcast.
Where we talked about A Star Is Born more than a year ago.
Yeah, so if you want to go hear Gaga talk about A Star Is Born as they were still filming it, right?
They had just wrapped filming. Just wrapped.
Like it was, what, the spring of 2017?
Yeah, they had just wrapped filming. And Coachella would have been April of 2017 when she headlined, right?
Yeah,
or would have been 2 years ago.
Was it?
Well, let's think about it. Wasn't it? Wouldn't it have been 2016 that she headlined? Because didn't Beyonce? Oh no, Beyonce did it this year. All right, sorry, people. No, Beyonce didn't do it this year.
Yeah, you get your. You have
when
a,
did
you
Gaga have, filled in for Beyonce?
You have the power of a computer in front of you, Katie.
Okay, was Beychella this year?
Okay, Katie's going to figure that out. In the meantime, I'll start reading you my chart stats. So, first up, friend of the podcast, Lady Gaga, along with Bradley Cooper, debuts at number one on the Billboard 200 albums chart with their soundtrack to the film A Star Is Born. Katie?
Beychella was this year. So, yes, Lady Gaga wrapped filming of A Star Is Born last spring when she headlined Coachella.
Well, I'm sure all you have to do is just Google Lady Gaga Pop Shop Podcast and you'll find Katie's interview with Gaga.
Yes, listen away.
Well, A Star Is Born, it's the fifth number one album for Gaga and the first for Cooper. Obviously, it's not like Bradley Cooper's had a whole lot of chart success.
Although he could, man, he's good in that movie. Like, he is convincing as a musician. Oh. He's a rock star.
Well, the set enters atop the tally with 231,000 equivalent album units earned in the week ending October 11th, according, of course, to Nielsen Music. And that marks the largest week for a soundtrack in more than 3.5 years. The last soundtrack to score a bigger week in terms of total units was the 50 Shades of Grey album, which debuted at number 2 on the list dated February 28th, 2015, with 258,000 units earned. 16, 17, 18. Yes, that is 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. I was terrified. I suddenly did terrible math on Sunday when I wrote my story. This is the third soundtrack that's hit number 1 this year on the Billboard 200, by the way. Previously at number 1 was Black Panther, the album.
The Greatest Showman.
And The Greatest Showman. Now, I wonder, will we get any more soundtracks at number 1 this year? I think the only thing that seems like a possibility might be Mary Poppins Returns.
Oh, yeah. That seems...
Maybe.
Maybe. Seems like a maybe.
Depends. I mean, it depends on how huge the movie is.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think anyone was expecting The Greatest Showman to do what it ended up doing.
Right.
I don't know. Stay tuned.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, it's a pretty busy week on the Billboard 200 chart, and really a lot of our charts, actually. On the Billboard 200, there are 6 debuts in the top 10, led by, of course, A Star Is Born. The other debuts, 21 Pilots' Trench starts at number 2, and then we have new albums debuting from Little Baby and Gunna. It's a collaborative album. Eric Church, Steve Perry, of course, the former frontman of Journey, and For King and Country all debut in the top 10 as well. Some notable nuggets about these top 10 debuts. I mean, I could rattle off stuff about each of them, but I'm not gonna. Trench starts with 175,000 units earned, and of that, 135,000 are in album sales, which represents 21 Pilots' biggest sales week ever for an album. So though they aren't number 1, they can still at least crow about how it's their best sales week. And for Steve Perry, his Traces album, which is his third solo studio effort, debuts at number 6, and that marks his first top 10 album ever. The former Journey frontman, of course, visited the chart twice previously as a soloist with his two earlier studio albums. For the Love of Strange Medicine reached number 15 in 1994, and Street Talk hit number 12 in 1984.
Is that the one that's like, Oh, Sherry?
Yeah, that's the one with, yeah. Oh, Sherry. I actually watched that video the other day.
Oh, it's a pretty good video.
It's a
so
bit...
So 80s.
It's very 80s. it has like a minute and a half sort of like intro, like fake out. Anyway, go watch it. Anyway, while Perry was with Journey, the band notched 7 top 10s from 1980's Departure through 1996's Trial by Fire. Lastly, the Billboard Hot 100 songs chart is quite busy this week. Not even just in the top 10, but the whole chart is kind of crazy. So make sure to tune in to Gary and Trevor on our Chartbeat podcast. And of course, visit billboard.com/chart-beat for all sorts of chart goodness. We can't cover everything.
No.
There was a nice person last week who tweeted at us, tweeted at me asking, basically saying like, oh, I basically didn't address Lil Wayne's debuts in the top 10 on the Hot 100. You know, as in depth as I could have, and that is true, but mm-hmm. there was just like so much to talk about.
Yeah.
And we know that Gary and Trevor, because they're like super hyper focused on charts, they'll get into it.
Yes.
With that said, Maroon 5's Girls Like You featuring Cardi B holds at number 1 for a 4th week on the Hot 100. Plus, there are a trio of collaborations that hit the top 10. Lil Baby and Gunna's Drip Too Hard zooms 25-4, Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper's Shallow charges 28-5, and Marshmello and Bastille's Happier climbs 13-8. Now, Drip Too Hard was the most streamed song of the week, and it gives Gunna his first top 10 and Little Baby his second. Shallow grants Gaga her 15th top 10 and Cooper his first, and there's lots of other songs from Gaga and Cooper on the chart elsewhere.
There are five total on the 100.
People bought it. Not only did people buy the album, it did pretty well in streaming. Not like rap streaming.
I've been streaming.
But the tracks actually sold really well too, which is kind of weird. You're like, well, why are people just buying individual tracks? Just buy the whole album, especially since it's coming from a sort of a musical-ish movie.
If you watch the movie, though, there are definitely songs that get bigger looks than other ones. Ones that are on the soundtrack that I didn't even hear in the movie, really.
Oh.
And so I think you probably could come out of there thinking, I want those three songs.
Those three songs
and
maybe
songs.
Not the whole album.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Yeah.
For Marshmello, he gets his first top 10, and Bastille nabs their second. That's a lot of stuff.
Hmm.
Outside the top 10, there's no shortage of action, and among the movers and shakers is Halsey, who debuts at number 18 with her new single, Without Me. Now, of course, had, you know, Lil Baby and Gunna's album not dropped, and Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper had not, you know, suddenly showed up with Star Is Born, certainly Halsey would have started higher.
Yeah.
But dims the brakes. And
I mean,
on
top 20. That's a pretty good debut.
Yeah. Do we know, unprompted, is this from like a brand new album that's coming?
I don't know that
do
she's
really
announced
know?
An album yet.
These artists these days. It could just be a standalone single for
Indeed.
All we know.
Should we start with some super sad news? Let's just launch into news with
sure,
sad news.
Sure, great.
As many of you have probably already heard, since you're pop music fans and followers of music news, after nearly 5 months together, Ariana Grande and Pete Davidson have parted ways and called off their engagement. So according to TMZ and People, the pop star and Saturday Night Live comedian who started dating in May mutually agreed to the split, indicating that the timing was off for the relationship to develop and that they still deeply care about each other. So Billboard reached out to representatives for both Grande and Davidson, and we have not heard back, nor has either star confirmed the breakup on social media yet. So this is all coming from TMZ and People Magazine reports.
But People is somewhat trustworthy
very
when
reliable.
It comes to relationship stuff.
They are way yeah. reliable when it comes to marriages, babies, relationships, people.
Hmm.
So Grande was scheduled to appear at a Fuck Cancer benefit concert on Saturday.
All right.
But she canceled a performance, and Scooter Braun, her manager, ended up speaking in her place, I guess. I mean, obviously he wasn't going to sing in her place, but he
Scooter,
did give
the
a
fill-in
speech.
Act.
And he sort of alluded to the difficult time that she's going through in the speech that he delivered at the event. And, of course, in addition to this breakup, there was also the death of her ex-boyfriend, Mac Miller, the previous month. So when he was speaking about her going through a tough time, obviously that, you know, encapsulates that as well. It was such a whirlwind. It all, you know, they were engaged in less than a month of dating. And who knows what the future holds.
Maybe they'll get re-engaged.
I would put some money on them getting back together.
Sure.
Because it just seems like, you know, the fire just burned too bright too quick.
Meanwhile, Pete Davidson was on SNL on Saturday night.
And
like
allegedly,
normal.
Reportedly, Ari was there.
Really?
Backstage. And then the TMZ report came out Sunday. So, yeah.
Well, who knows?
Indeed. We don't know. What we know is what I just told you.
You know, we can only know so much. And, you know, there's only so much that we can know.
It's so true. So moving on to, you know, more breakup news. Lindsey Buckingham sued his former band Fleetwood Mac last... Did I say Fleetwood Mac properly? It
yeah.
felt like I said it...
I think you said Fleetwood Mac.
Goodness, Fleetwood Mac last week for kicking him off their new tour. And in a response from the band, the spokesperson named Kristen Foster says, Fleetwood Mac looks forward to their day in court.
Oh, I'm sure they all do. Nothing more fun than to have Fleetwood Mac in court.
So in the lawsuit, the guitarist and songwriter is seeking his share of tour income because he says he still wants and is able to perform.
Yeah, but if the other four don't want you...
Well, so the suit names bandmates Mick Fleetwood, Stevie Nicks, Christine McVie, and John McVie. Buckingham claims he was told 5 days after the group appeared at Radio City Music Hall in January. That was for
Music Cares
during the Grammys. He was told that the band would tour without him. He says he would have been paid at least $12 million for his share of the tour proceeds. The tour kicked off on October 3rd with Mike Campbell and Neil Finn performing in Buckingham's place.
So what is Lindsay actually, what is like the thing he's suing for? He's like suing for like damages.
Loss of income.
But he was like let go from the band.
So, yeah, so, but he's saying he should get paid what this tour would have paid.
But if you're just, like, let go from the band, do you have any right to, like, say...
We don't know when this tour was conceived and whether he had agreed to it or signed anything or planned on it or, you know, made arrangements for his life based on a tour schedule that might have existed.
So perhaps there's a suggestion that there were already plans, like they internally knew that the tour was going to happen, and then all of a sudden he's just like shown the door and he's like, I rearranged my life.
Meanwhile, he's touring himself simultaneous to Fleetwood Mac's tour. Just hit LA, I think, a few days ago, actually. So, you know.
I think this is the first time that there's actually been some sort of, like, court action.
Right, as you, I mean, you alluded to the fact that, like, there's nothing but drama in the history of this band. Relationship drama and just inner, you know, squabbles.
Personnel drama.
Drama in general.
I mean, Lindsay, I mean, really, like, the band could have sued him in, like, 87 or 88 because... They put out the Tango in the Night album, and he, I guess, had disagreements with the band, or I don't know what happened. I mean, you probably can't get a straight story out of anyone about what happened. They released singles, they filmed music videos, they started promoting it, the album was a success, the singles were a success, they were supposed to go on tour, the tour was routed, they were ready to go, and then suddenly something happened, they had an argument, and Lindsay left. And then they suddenly had to find two people to replace Lindsay because the tour was already routed and ready to go. And then he doesn't come back to the band until 1997 for the reunion album, The Dance. So why didn't Fleetwood Mac then sue him and say, you left us in the lurch, and why did you quit? I mean...
And maybe they thought they could tour without him this time. Like, okay, remember when we didn't sue you then? Like, why don't you be cool about this? We just don't want to see you night after night.
Yeah, it's all, well, let's...
It's all very Fleetwood Mac. But you're right, it's the legal aspect is a new fun wrinkle in things.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing Stevie Nicks on the, you know, stand testifying. No, I don't. I mean, goodness gracious, I'm not sure she does either. Anyway, let's move on, sorry.
Okay, so moving on. Quavo, one third of Migos, released his first solo album late Thursday last week, and it is packed with features including Drake, Normani, Travis Scott, and both of his Migos bandmates. Then there's this other song. It's called Champagne Rosé, or if you pronounce it like Champagne, it's said Rose. In the song, it's Champagne Rosé. this one features Quavo's sister-in-law, Cardi B, of course, right. Married to Offset.
Makes sense.
And Madonna.
Sure. You know, Madonna.
Keith, everyone who listens to the show knows Keith likes Madonna.
Don't know what you're talking Madonna. About. Having the fog yet.
So I just wanted to bring this up. I just wanted to set the table to just chat with Keith about Madonna being on the Quavo album.
The Quavo album is called, by the
Quavo
way.
Huncho.
Quavo Huncho. And because it's a little chart action for you, because it actually was released on Thursday last week, it was released early. It was actually released 3 hours earlier than normal.
Yep, it was 9 p.m. Eastern.
So it debuts on our charts this week.
Oh.
It debuts, as I look behind me, at number 66 on the Billboard 200.
That is a respectable debut for 3 hours of consumption.
So obviously that album, in theory, should shoot up the chart next week. I don't know where it's going to end up. Stay tuned to Billboard.com. But yeah, it does feature a song featuring Madonna, which is so weird. Like, Madonna, I think, has only been featured on, don't quote me, but try me, twice.
Oh, wow. This is information I did not have.
Well, there was Britney Spears featuring Madonna, Me Against the Music.
Sure.
And then there's this.
Stop.
I don't...
That's it?
I don't think.
Wow.
I mean, I could do an iTunes Google. Feel free to iTunes Google
it. It just makes you wonder how much she's turned down. Like, how many people she's turned down. How many opportunities that she let go. But she decided that Britney... And that Quavo were, let's go for it. And you know, if you listen to the song yet, if anyone's listening has listened to the song yet, the feature is literally, it's very small. It's just a vocal of Madonna saying Champagne Rosé, right? Like, basically.
Drink me up in something, Champagne Rosé.
Yeah, and it sounds very similar to what Keith just said
It's like 8 words, 10 words, and she just says it's like repeated endlessly.
So it made me wonder whether she
then
worked
she adds
with a...
She adds like two more lines, I think, in the bridge, maybe. It's almost like she recorded like a voice memo and sent it to Quavo.
I was going to say, it made me wonder if she worked with the producer of the song or something, and this producer had this little bit of a, you know, of a thing, and then Quavo asked, is it cool if I turn this into a song? Like, with you staying on it? And she said yes, obviously, because this song exists in the world and was released.
It's barely a feature.
Yes.
It's barely a feature.
But it's the first thing you and I both open up that track list, see Madonna, Cardi B. Obviously, it's the first song we're listening to.
It's a huge WTF. I mean, it is.
It is. I thought it was a WTF before I knew this information that it is 50% of her featured credits, like, wow, in the world.
Yeah, it's yeah.
All right, well, I'm looking forward to what Madonna has to say about this. Like, has she said a thing about it? Has she tweeted about it or anything?
She posted an Instagram acknowledging that it exists, but she hasn't. It just seems like it's just sort of like a, yeah, I did this thing.
Do you remember the other, like, Madonna Migos cross-reference thing that happened earlier this year? They filmed a music video and posted a screenshot of the music video, and she was like, what are you doing at my house? Do you remember that?
Well,
they like filmed something at her house.
It was her Oscar party.
So were they literally at her house? Like,
I think
so. And like she was there and it was all just like a joke? Because made it seem like she used to live there and then like they were filming something.
Well,
there.
I don't know where exactly it was, but Migos and Cardi B were both at Madonna's Oscar party.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
And there's a shot.
About two separate things.
There's a shot on Madonna's Instagram where Cardi, Quavo, and her are like in a sort of photo op setup.
Okay, so you and I are talking about two different things.
Two different things. I'm
because
sorry.
Because Migos filmed their Narcos video at a house that Madonna either once owned or currently owns, and she didn't know about it.
Oh.
So she saw that on their Instagram and was like, yo, that's my house.
That's weird.
Yes.
Yeah.
That happened over the summer.
Yeah, we're talking about two different things.
Anyway, they're friends.
Yeah.
And now they have a feature together.
I think perhaps in my opinion, because yeah, I've been very delicately not actually given an opinion about
right.
this track. I would like to see a Cardi Madonna collabo, just the two of them, just because.
Oh yeah.
Cardi is a known and admitted fan of Madonna, and she's played Madonna's music on her Instagram. She says, you know, she's talked about how her mom introduced her to like Madonna's music, and
yeah.
she like will like play old Madonna tracks from the 80s. Like that, I think, sort of makes sense in terms of like what seems like a natural fit. And like the Britney Madonna thing obviously made sense because Britney was, you know, sort of.
It was like a passing of the baton.
No.
Then.
Madonna still holds that baton. No one's going to take the damn thing.
I'm sorry, it was a sharing of the baton.
It's not a relay race. She's not somewhere in the background and Britney runs ahead. It's sort of a sharing of like the sort of the pop princess,
yes.
queen of pop, you
yes.
know, that whole thing.
Yes.
But this, I was like, really? Quavo? But, you know, it's like.
We'd like to hear your opinions. You tell us what
oh,
you think.
Oh, yeah.
Twitter.
Tell us what you think of this champagne rosé. Beats my game. Or whatever the hell she's saying.
So now it is time for our interview with Madison Beer.
Who's not old enough to drink champagne rosé.
Or beer. The pop singer has been in the public eye since she was 13. And now that she's 19, she's really ready to introduce her musical voice to her massive fan base. She came into the office to talk about her pop radio hit, Home With You. Her recent dream collaboration with David Guetta for Blame It On Love, her plans to finally release a debut album, and much more. So here's our interview with Madison Beer. Hello to Madison Beer, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming in today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And first of all, congratulations on the success of your song, Home With You.
Thank you.
It's your first song to hit Billboard's Pop Songs Radio Airplay chart.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think this song specifically connected the way it did?
I think we live in a really important time right now, and a very interesting time as well. I think women are finally really getting the respect that they've always deserved, and I think that we... With social media and with music and with accessibility to each other, we've been able to really, you know, discuss how to say no and how to stand up for ourselves and how to be strong and, you know, come together as a gender and be able to be, you know, equal to men. And I think that my song really conveys that message, and in a fun, loving way. It's definitely meant to be lighthearted, and it's meant to, you know, have, you could play it in your room and listen to it without even thinking of the meaning. But I also love it when people will really digest the lyrics and be able to be like, have my voice in the back of their head saying, you know, I'm not going home with you.
Totally. And mm-hmm. you co-wrote the song, so it must be especially gratifying to have it have such success.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, we did a show the other day, and there was these little girls who couldn't be older than 7 years old singing every word to the song. And I stopped at the end, and I was like, you guys are amazing. I was like, I just want you to know, like, those lyrics mean a lot. And one day, maybe not yet, but one day I hope that you really use them and remember for the rest of your life that you don't have to do anything you don't want. And it was just cool to see, even at that age.
You know, it's funny, because we actually just interviewed Emily Warren a couple of weeks ago, who co-wrote Dua Lipa's New Rules.
Yeah.
And she told us a story about how when she first moved to LA, that she got the advice that she should never write a song where the guy isn't going to get it, like, quote unquote, get it. Which
times have definitely changed.
Right. Yeah. So hearing your song and hearing New Rules and having them be such big radio hits, obviously, it's, you know, the tide has changed a bit, to say the least.
And I'm very glad that I'm hopefully one of the reasons that's maybe a few people's minds have changed.
You know, you made your late night debut with the song, performing on James Corden. That's such a huge platform for you and such a big audience. What feedback did you get after that performance?
Everyone loved it. I mean, it was definitely, I mean, obviously it was my first thing, so people knew I was really nervous, and it was highly anticipated, so I was in my head a lot about it, but it was really fun, and there was people who flew from, like, Nashville to come see it, and it was a really, really cool thing, and James was so sweet, and he came up to me after I performed, and he was like, do you feel confident in that? I think it was amazing, but if you want to do it again, I'll let you do it again.
Cool.
He was so nice, and really made me feel comfortable with everything. He let me go into the sound room and, like, listen to everything and give my feedback, so it was a really fun experience. I think the fans really liked it as well.
You know, and it seems like such, it's the kind of show that, you know, my mom watches that show. Like, did you find that people were discovering you through it who maybe didn't know about you before?
Yeah, every show I do that isn't at my own tour, I make sure to, you know, be like, hey, by the way, my name's Madison Beer. This is what I do for a living, and I hope that you like the way I sing and my music. So I love going on a show or having a platform where I feel like I could really introduce myself to people. But that is a more nerve-wracking experience, because you're like, well, if I make a bad first impression, then I don't really get another one. But it's fun. I think it's really fun to be able to go out there and catch new eyes and get more of an audience.
Totally. And Home With You, it was part of your first EP, As She Pleases, which came out earlier this year. You know, you've been in the public eye and making music since 2012, since you were 13. Right. So why did it take so long to kind of put this project out and you know, to introduce yourself in this way?
Well, you said it yourself, like, I was 13 years old.
Right.
I feel like I didn't have a sense of artistry, or I didn't have a sense of the music that I wanted to make. And every time I would go in the studio and I'd make my EP, a month later I'd scrap it and be like, I hate every song, I don't want to do it, because that's how 13-year-olds are.
Sure.
So, you know, I just felt like it was better to take my time with it and really learn who I was before putting myself out into the world in the way that I did, because I'm already, you know, I have a very intrusive life, I guess you could say. Like, I think that a lot of people know too much about me, truthfully. I think that, you know, so for me to have some ounce of control over the way people perceive me, that, like, was a really, like, fulfilling thing. And I was like, you know what, I'm gonna wait until I feel really confident in this. And it ended up being, like, the EP was really something for me to communicate to the world who I really was, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions of who I am and what I'm about and the things I like out there, that I get judged on social media or whatever. And so I really wanted to take that opportunity to be like, you know, this is the kind of music I'm into. I hope you listen to my EP and say, okay, I think I know Madison Beer a little bit.
You know, having that debut on our pop songs chart and getting that radio airplay, it just feels like this big, like, legitimate step in your music career.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you Google your name, you're getting fashion results and relationship results, but you're a musician, and this is, you know, what you set out to do from the very beginning. So it's cool to, like, get to this point where, the music is finally getting heard the way it should be.
For sure. It's definitely better. And
I'm sure.
It's a lot better. A lot more fulfilling.
Do you have a full-length album in mind? Is that a priority for you?
I do, yeah. I mean, listen, like, the times have changed. Like, albums don't do as well now, and they don't sell as well, and it's kind of more of an investment than it is a return. But I just think, as an artist, like, putting an album out is, like, such an amazing, gratifying feeling, and I want to make sure that I, you know, like, I conveyed myself with my EP. I feel like now I've I've even more developed into my artistry, and I've even more like learned who I am. So it's just, it's something that I definitely want to do, and I'll hopefully have one out top of the year. I'm really trying to get it done and have it be like a continuous story.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you, you know, grow up with albums that were your favorites, things that you might look to as inspiration, you know, going into?
Growing up, it was kind of more songs than it was albums. Okay. I feel like as I've gotten older and I've been able to really appreciate music, I've you know, listened to albums. I mean, like, I can name 20 that I pull inspiration from, but I just love music. Music's been a part of me my entire life, and it's been my escape for a long time. So I just feel like hopefully someone could listen to my album and get inspiration and, you know, come follow in my footsteps at one point. And I think that's the beauty of it. And
totally.
Yeah. So I'm definitely going to have one out for sure.
Awesome. Are you working on it now?
I am. I'm probably like 6-7 songs deep. Okay. So I'm almost there, but I really want it to be perfect. Last time I was 7 songs deep with my EP, I scrapped it all. So like I'll definitely be taking my time with it, but it's coming.
And do you plan to do as much songwriting on it as you were able to do on the EP?
Even more. I mean, I wrote half of my EP, I would say, and if not more, I don't really know the exact number. I could figure it out if I tried, but I'm definitely hoping to have written at least every song. I want to have at least a little bit of my name on it, you know, and I don't think a lot of people realize how it works, kind of. I think people assume that everyone writes every song, when in reality most people don't write their own songs, which is fine, because I think you putting your voice on it is enough in itself. And but for me, I feel like now it's even important, like with my song Dead or with Home With You, for mm-hmm. example, that were demos previously. When I get them, they sound completely different than to how they are now, because mm-hmm. I'll go in with the producer and I'll change the production and I'll rewrite a line or two just to like adapt it to my own views and the way I speak or whatever. So that's at least what I'm doing for my album. So if I don't write 100% of the songs, at least I produced some of them or did this or did that. So there's always going to be pieces of me in there. It's not just ever going to be someone else's whole thing.
And are you somebody who like is always kind of, you know, jotting down lyrics? Yes. Or yeah, are you like
my
in
notes
your phone
are like one liners? Yeah. And everyone's like, why is there this note? Like, literally, actually, it's funny you say that, because my friend was on my phone and she was writing, I had to like do this weird project thing. She was writing things that I said down in my phone, and she saw the other one and it said, when I fell for you, it made the ocean seem deep, same shallow. Mm. And I like wrote that down and she was like, what is this? She's like, what are you writing?
Yeah,
like, what are you writing about? I was like, I just do that all the time. So I'm always jotting down things.
Do you like, have you gotten the chance, I guess, to get into the room with like songwriters and do like songwriting camp type things as well?
Yeah. I mean, so, like, for example, my song Tyler Durden, Teenager in Love, Fools, those were all written in basically a writing camp with these two guys who actually have done a lot on my album as well. And, yeah, we just sit down and we come up with ideas. And so, for example, like, Tyler Durden is, like, the funniest story, I think. So it's actually most people that come up to me and say they love my EP say they love Tyler Durden, like, always. So we had a session this day, and we're very close friends, like we all are super super close. So we had a session this one day, but we hadn't seen each other in a few months, so we kind of wasted the whole day catching up.
Sure.
And watching YouTube videos or whatever. And then all of a sudden we looked at the clock and it was 10 p.m. We were like, oh no, we just wasted our whole day. And as I was about to call my Uber and go home, I was like, should we just write a song like really quick, and if we have to throw it away, well, at least we did something. And they're like, yeah, what do you want to write about? We had just finished watching Fight Club. So I was like, let's write about Tyler Durden. They're like, okay, cool. I wrote it in maybe 10 minutes.
Whoa.
And then went into the booth, cut it, thought we'd never do anything with it again, and then it just never left my head. I was like, I really like that song. I think that's like maybe one of my favorite songs we've ever done, and it's the favorite. So I think it's funny how those things happen.
Yeah, I guess you can't even plan for it.
No,
most
you
of the time.
Can't.
You know, we talked to you on the red carpet at the VMAs in August, and you mentioned that you're planning to get in the studio with Max Martin, and I'm going to totally butcher his name, but Savin Kotecha.
Mm-hmm.
Have you already had a chance to?
We've gotten like songs from them and stuff, but I haven't been face to face like in a studio with them yet, but it's going to happen. For sure. I would love to work with them. I mean, they're legends. So
yeah, the like list of songs that their names are attached to at this point is nuts.
Yeah.
In addition to your own projects, you actually worked with David Guetta on the song Blame It on Love for his new album.
Yeah.
How did that collaboration come about?
I mean, I've been a fan of David Guetta's for a long time. I mean, I love EDM, I love house music, whatever. So he's just, I think, such a cool DJ, and he's been so influential on music in the past however many years. And when he was doing his album, they were like, you know, reaching out to people being like, who wants to be on it, whatever. And when they hit us up, I was so excited. And I didn't really think the song was going to make the album because I figured maybe I'm just one of the people who's recording it and not going to get on it. And then once we found out that it was actually going to be on the album and that he loved working with me, it was really, really cool.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's so awesome.
Do you have any other dreams like that that you kind of hope people who will just drop out of the sky and email you to be on a project?
Daft Punk is at the top of my list.
You mentioned that at the VMAs.
Yeah.
That would be,
they're still up there, so if they're listening, please contact my people.
I always want new music from them, so yes, I just want them to make new music in general. Madison when you do.
Yeah, please.
You did a tour last spring around the EP. You know, what did you learn from that, your first headlining tour experience?
I learned a lot from it. I think it was much different than I expected it to be. I started with the European tour and then went to U.S. Mm-hmm. And in Europe, I was expecting it to be much calmer than the U.S. because, I mean, I'm used to fans in America. It was the opposite. The fans overseas are so excited and they're just, like, so full of, I mean, of course, the ones in America are too. But, like, overseas, it was just crazy. And it was just such a fun experience. I think it was a learning experience as well as a growing experience. And it was just really cool being able to put on a show every night. I mean, this is what I've dreamed of my whole entire life. So, like, for me, it was nothing but amazingness. And the second it ended, I couldn't wait to get on the U.S. one. So I was very happy to be on tour. And I hope to be on many, many more.
Yeah. Do you have any plans to tour again soon?
Yeah. So when the album's out, after the album comes out, I'll be on tour very shortly after, probably 2-3 weeks after the album drops. And I'm just excited. I'm like, so I dream about it. Tour is, like, my favorite thing ever.
Are there people that you love seeing live that you've seen before and kind of are like, they're awesome?
Rihanna's like my favorite person. I'm trying to think of the most recent person. Do you know Youngblood?
Yeah.
So he's amazing. Like, I saw him live the other day and I was so blown away. He's like an incredible performer.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you like to get out to see shows?
Yeah, I love live music and I love, like, I also go to shows because I learn things from it and I get ideas. And I saw the Childish Gambino concert recently and just like inspired so much for me. And
he's so,
especially
because
I saw him at like the Scotiabank in Toronto. And that itself inspires me. Whenever I see an artist in an arena, I'm like, I want to be here one day, I want to be doing this.
Yep.
So it's good to kind of give yourself motivation.
It's kind of insane how he, like, literally, like, is able to recreate the energy from This Is America video, like, live.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
I know. It's crazy.
So we've talked about a lot of things, but, like, can you tease anything that's next? What do your fans not know about that they should know about?
Yeah, I have a single coming out really soon.
Okay.
That I'm super, super excited about. It's probably my favorite one yet, and it's super strong. And it's, again, with the same kind of message of being badass and, you know, being yourself. So I'm excited for it.
Awesome. Well, we will look out for that.
Thank you.
Really appreciate your time today, and good luck
too
with the new single and all of your future music.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Madison.
Bye. Let's just live it on love.
Thank you so much to Madison for coming into the office. We are looking forward to her next music, which, as she sort of teased, is coming very soon.
Maybe out right now.
I don't think it will be. It's not that soon.
It's not that soon.
Soon-ish.
And now it's time for the chart stat of the week. I'll be there with the love that's gone. This week in 1970, the Jackson 5's I'll Be There topped the Hot 100, the fourth and final chart topper for the sibling group. The track climbed 2-1 on the tally dated October 17th, 1970, and spent 5 weeks at number one. I'll Be There was the fourth number one in a row for the group, following The Love You Save, ABC, and I Want You Back. The act would continue to chart hits through the 1970s, even after the act had a slight lineup change and a new name, the Jacksons. That was when Jermaine left the group and was replaced with one of the younger brothers, whose name just fell out of my head.
Hmm.
But anyway, eventually Jermaine came back in the 80s, and it was all fine. The act last visited the Hot 100 in 1989 with Nothing, parenthetical, that compares numeral to the letter U, in parenthetical. And no, that's not a cover of Prince's Nothing Compares to You. It's a very, very different song. It's very 1989, sort of like L.A. Reid Babyface, sort of like,
okay,
that, you know, like Bobby Brown, like sort of Pebbles sound.
Oh, sure, yeah. I might need to listen to that
lots
now.
Lots of sort of like
I mean, is that the New Jack swing it's pre-New Jack?
It seems like it's sort of like right on the cusp of sort of pre-New Jack or right in the thick
okay.
of New Jack.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, New Jackson swing, yes, I suppose.
There you go.
I'll Be There made a return visit to the top of the Hot 100.
Oh, yes.
By way of Mariah Carey's cover of the track in 1992. Her version topped the list for 2 weeks. Some other songs that hit number one twice by two different acts: Venus by The Shocking Blue and Bananarama, You Keep Me Hanging On by The Supremes and Kim Wilde, and Lady Marmalade by LaBelle, and then later, Christina Aguilera, Lil' Kim, Maya, and Pink. And that's just a few. There have been like 8 or 9 songs
that's
that hit number
fascinating.
One.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Just it's really good songs.
Lady Marmalade was the last one to do it.
Wow.
We haven't had a number one come back to number one in a cover form.
Mm.
So there you have it. This week in 1970, the Jackson 5 scored its fourth and so far final number one on the Hot 100 with I'll Be There. Okay, Katie. Any parting words?
Oh, I really love that Mariah cover of I'll Be There.
Well, since we didn't actually hear it in the chart stat,
yeah,
we heard the Jacksons.
Give
we
the
go
people
out.
A little taste of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See you
Mariah.
Guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Just call my name and I'll be there.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.